A week's supply of chai.
Okay.
I'm happy to commit to that.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Tripology. I'm Alan, and I'm here with the ever-Canadian Adam.
Oi, oi. How's it going, mate?
It's going well for me, but even better for you. Finally, after over a year of episodes, I'm able to introduce you as the ever-Canadian Adam. Oh, gone are the days where you were just a Brit travelling around the world, residing in Canada like some sort of intruder. Now you are the ever-Canadian Adam because, hold the drum rolls, applause, party poppers and fireworks, you've achieved permanent residency.
Yeah, that's right, mate. It's been a slog. I'll be honest, it's taken a long time and I've put a serious shift in. So maybe some listeners might have thought, oh my God, he's sort of renounced his British passport. But no, I'm a permanent resident, which is obviously sort of a step up. I'm now no longer on a work permit or anything of that nature. And yeah, I'm really, really pleased, I'll be honest.
Congratulations, mate, because it has been a slog. I've been privy to lots of late night phone calls. Oh God, I don't know if my visa will ever be approved. I don't know if permanent residency is ever something written in the stars for me. But here we are. The stars have answered. You've got a piece of paper now that entitles you to all sorts of wonderful perks, and I'm ever so excited for you. You've worked really hard for it. You've really endured the whole process. I'm proud of you. And, you know, Canadian national anthem abound. I think you're really there. You're living the life.
Yeah. What I'd like to do to sort of talk about this with you, mate, is use it as maybe an open forum about permanent residency for different countries as a traveler tool, if you know what I mean. So I don't know if this is something you'd ever considered, but now that I have the ability to live and work across Canada and also the UK, I feel like from a travel perspective, it just gives me many more options.
Well, quite nice to have multiple bases, isn't it? This is something, you know, We've explored working holiday visas a lot on the podcast and how I've used working holiday visas as little bases across the world. Oh, I've got a base in Australia now. Oh, I've got a base in New Zealand and all that jazz. But you now have a permanent base in another country other than the UK. What a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think it's really fortuitous, really. It just takes the pressure off. It means that it gives me more choice and I can sort of come and go as I please. I can work for any business now. And I think it's going to be something that propels me and my travels and hopefully Tripology into the future in a more sort of sustainable and financially secure way. There are obviously lots of areas of Canada that I'm really interested in exploring. And now that I'm able to come and go freely, it's going to be just far easier to do so. I don't know if you've ever considered achieving permanent residency for a country. Do you think that they're, because they take so much time and energy and money, I mean, it is a hell of a commitment, let's be honest. Is it something that you've ever considered for yourself, or do you see them as somewhat of a restriction?
I've considered it before just once. I was in a place known as New Zealand and I thought maybe I'll get permanent residency here. But the problem for me is it takes an awful long time to do. So there's a real inhibitive process where you have to bunker down in a country and give up your mantle as traveller for a while, as we know that you've had to do.
Yeah.
And then there's often a time where you have to spend a certain number of days in that country, even once you've been granted permanent residency, even once they've put that gold Kiwi badge on your little pinny and you think, oh, I'm a New Zealander now. You still have to stay in the country for a certain amount of time every year. And all that just seems like it would feel like a kind of shackle on my tripological status. But how do you feel about that? Do you have to spend a significant amount of time in Canada now still?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought it up because it was something I was going to mention. If anyone has got any questions regarding the permanent residency process for Canada specifically, or is currently going through it perhaps, please do send us an email at tripologypodcast@gmail.com because I would love to hear your thoughts. Of course, we can share ideas and hopefully I can answer any questions that you may have. having just been through the process, of course, but 730 days is what they ask, which I would say is very reasonable.
Well, it's not if they're asking for that amount of time in 1 year. I mean, how reasonable is it? How long do you have to... The only way this is ever going to work is if you spend 730 days in Canada this year, Adam. Oh, yeah. Christ!
Immediately retract the permanent residency. No, so it's 730 days in a five-year period. So the clock starts ticking when you receive the all-important confirmation via email. And then, yeah, your status changes. And then, of course, if you spend 730 days in the country in the following 5 years, they don't have to be consecutive either, which I think is very important, then you will retain your status as a permanent resident going forward.
Nice. Well, it's all important information for the listening audience to know. We now have a PR expert on the show, and lo and behold, it was always going to be either me or Adam. Turns out it's going to be Adam. So if you ever want to get more information about PR, as Adam said, we've got an email address. You can also reach out to us on the old Instagram at Tropology Podcast. I'm proud of you. I think it opens the door for some amazing, wonderful travels in the future. Is there anything else you'd like to say about PR, or shall we go on and I'll tell you about some of my sojournments?
Yeah, I think just hopefully the listeners there thinking, oh my goodness, I wonder what Adam's going to get up to across Canada. And yeah, I can promise you there's going to be some great stories coming up. So I look forward to it. And now I can't wait to hear what you're going to say.
Oh, well, mate, I think, you know, last time the listening audience heard from me, I was surfing, I was chilling, I was vibing in Goa. I was on a little adventure with Emmy and Luis and we were traveling around. My goodness, is that group fractured and gone its separate ways. Emmy's in Sri Lanka. Luis is down south in Kerala. I've gone on my own little solo excursion, like a sort of agent moving through the night buses all over India. I went to the wonderful land of Hampi. Have you ever heard of Hampi?
I feel like it rings a bell, but I can't say I know anything about it at all, no.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about it. If gather round, everyone, why don't all our listeners just come a little bit closer? I want to tell you a bit about Hampi, because it was known as Hippie Island in the 80s and the 70s and maybe even the 60s, if you dare to go back that far. Hippie Island was known as this place in India where people with dreadlocks and tattoos would come from all around to learn about Hinduism, to sort of bathe in the river, to sing songs, to dance, to make music, to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was a real thriving backpacker haven until like 2016.
Wow.
The government said, you ain't going to do this anymore. This place is spiritual. Hippie Island's a thing of the past. We're making this a UNESCO heritage site. Get out of Hampi. And all the hippies fled for the hills. Hampi became this really super spiritual UNESCO Hindu site where there's lots of beautiful temples and everything. And the hippie community became all fractured and moved out of the main part of Hampi and a little bit down the road. So now, still a hippie community in Hampi, but it just exists a little bit further on the other side of the river. I spent a few days there, mate. There's some cool things about Hampi, yeah.
What did you get up to?
I rented a scooter and we were just scooting about. I saw some of those temples, really amazing, wonderful architecture. I was learning all about Hinduism. I was learning about Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. I was learning about the incarnations of Vishnu. 10 incarnations Vishnu will ultimately have over the course of the universe. So far, we're only on number 9. There's one yet to come. And when that happens, oh, it's going to be an hell of an apocalypse, Adam. It's going to be a hell of a crazy time. But I was learning about Shit. Ram, the 7th incarnation, Krishna, the 8th incarnation. And every night I would go to this hill where the Hare Krishna movement would sing chants and songs at sundown. And me and the other backpackers would watch as the sun fell over the horizon. And we'd sing praisings to Ram, to Krishna, to Hanuman, to Sita.
Have you found that other backpackers are there for spiritual reasons as well as, you know, checking it out because they, I don't know, had been told about it, or maybe because it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site now?
I think the backpackers in Hampi divide into three categories. There's the people who are interested in the UNESCO stuff, the temples. There are people who are really there on a spiritual quest to learn more about Hinduism. And then, of course, you've got the performative, materialistic spiritualism of people who kind of are there displaying their spirituality in a very visceral way, but maybe aren't so interested in the message behind it. That's always going to be a part of kind of the backpacking community, I feel like, this sort of performative spiritualism. I myself, very interested in Hinduism, actually, not in a way like I'm going to convert to Hinduism, but I'm kind of traveling, seeking kind of deeper knowledge and information about these things. I think always important to understand a place's religious background if you want to understand its culture. And really a cool way to do that was to go and spend time with these Hare Krishnas, talk to them afterwards, say, you know, what is it about this Ram character? What is it about Krishna? What is it about Vishnu? Learn a little bit about it. And I feel like all that then meant when I went to the UNESCO heritage sites on my scooter and saw those idols, those effigies, those carvings in the temples, I was able to understand it on a deeper level.
That's amazing. It sounds like it sort of brings it to life, I imagine. And you get like a much better understanding of the culture. Are you hanging around with anyone in particular at the moment, or are you doing this on your own?
Well, I'll say this, India, very unusual backpacking scene, unlike anything I've ever experienced before. In Nepal, I could barely go for dinner on my own, even if I wanted to, because backpackers would come up to me and be like, hey, let's go for dinner together. Even if I was sat at a restaurant on my lonesome, people would come up to me. In India, quite difficult to find other backpackers in hostels, unless it's at events like that. Like, backpackers would congregate on the hillside at sundown. But if you just go into a hostel, often it's local Indian people staying in the hostels. The backpackers are sort of dispersed. There's no central common area hub, and that's been quite a challenge. I've met a lot of travellers on buses on the way to a place, you know, that kind of thing.
Have you spoken to other backpackers about it and had sort of open conversations about how different it is?
Yeah, and everyone's in the same camp. Everyone's like, yeah, it's a really unusual country. It's a very different scene to like Nepal or Thailand or anywhere in the rest of the SAARC, South Asian countries. So yeah, it is a little bit different.
Is it hard work?
It's harder work than other countries have been to meet people, to meet good people. That said, I still haven't spent much time alone. Like I said, I had Louise and Emmy for a little bit. I was about to board a bus to Hampi, and on the bus, at the bus stop, I met other travelers. So there's always like a route to meet people, but it just isn't the same as in, you know, another country where you might check into a hostel and there's a whole community ready to go.
Yeah, sure. Because I remember I spoke to someone years and years ago, and they lived in Delhi twice, actually. Wicked Mexican guy, used to work in textiles. And he said to me that you really need to persevere with India in order to understand its beauty. You know, going for a couple of weeks isn't really going to do the country justice. If you stick it out and stay for a few months, you'll start to realize how incredible the country really is. And I just wondered how you felt about that statement and whether it's something that you can sort of agree with at this stage.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a challenging backpack, you know. I think it's like, where other countries have a pre-made route, it's like, okay, first you go to Phnom Penh, now you go to Siem Reap. Well done, you've seen Cambodia. Here, it's a little bit, it's a little bit more like a nebulous route. People are going in all different directions. I'm currently in a part of India, which we'll talk about on subsequent episodes, where not many other backpackers are, not many other travelers think to go here. So there is a very vague outline of places that you're supposed to quote unquote visit, and not everyone goes there. It's much more of a choose your own adventure style country than say Nepal, than say Thailand, etc.
Yeah, that's really cool. I quite like that, because one of the gripes, you know, I had when I was backpacking, I suppose, maybe to a lesser extent, but I know I kind of get a feeling that I'm going to feel that now, is if I am always surrounded by lots of Western backpackers, for me, that's going to detract from the experience somewhat.
Yeah, in some sense, I am someone who likes the backpacking community to feel close by. Like, I enjoy going and experiencing a day, coming back, detoxing with other people who have a similar cultural background, maybe experiencing their experiences through their lens. I like hearing stories, travel stories, that sort of thing. That said, it is nice to feel very immersed. So there's two sides of a very beautiful Indian travel coin.
Yeah, that's wicked. You just twigged a memory of mine, actually. You know, the Trans-Siberian Railway, I remember across that journey, I didn't meet another Western backpacker until I was in Vladivostok. So, you know, this is weeks, 3 weeks after leaving sort of Moscow, nearly four, actually. And there was one day along that trip where I remember going 24 hours without speaking to anyone.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, it's unusual. And then when you do speak to someone, finally, after all that time, you're all frantic and like overbearing, aren't you?
Yeah.
I met someone just the other day who told me she'd not spoken to another English speaker in like 48 hours. And I met her and she was all frantic. She was like, hello, I'm from France. How are you? Shall we maybe be friends? Who knows what the future could hold? Yeah, I think people, when they've been away from other people for a long time, you end up sort of vibrating at a slightly different frequency. And speaking of vibrating at a slightly different frequency, Adam, I don't know about you, should we calm our vibrations with a brief meditation break? Let's go.
I think it's for the best.
And like two people who enjoy very much the spiritual nature of meditation, let's open our eyes back in this room. You can see us on youtube.com/anthropologypodcast. You can follow us on all social media, Anthropology Podcast. You can send us emails, anthropologypodcast@gmail.com. Those are all the ways you can reach out to us, see us, look at our faces, experience Adam's social media prowess. I mean, what a wonderful time to be a anthropologist. What a wonderful time to be alive. Adam, you told me, wait till after the meditation break. Have I got something for you? Shall we do that something right now?
I think we should, mate. And I'm really excited about this one. Back by popular demand, we have everyone's favorite travel game show. It is Tripping Point.
Oh my God. Play the theme music.
Tripping Point. So, Alan, I've got a little surprise for you this week, mate. This is an India versus Canada edition. Are you ready?
The ever-Canadian Adam compiling Canuck-style questions for me, a man who's residing in India. Let's go.
So, I'll just explain the context for the listener. There's going to be five questions, and the answers are always either India or Canada.
Okay.
So it's quite an interesting one.
Multiple choice of a by-answer nature.
Exactly. So here we go. Here we go. Question number one. This country is the world's largest producer of films, producing 1,500 to 2,000 films per year.
Okay. I know the answer to this. Oh, no, I don't, actually. Crikey. I just remembered about Bollywood. Oh, my God.
Are we locking in your answer?
I tell you what, I get terrible, terrible anxiety about Tripping Point. I really do. Look, I know that Vancouver is really, really known for its movie industry. But I actually think that Vancouver is second to Hollywood. It's the second largest film producer in North America, maybe. So I'm going to go with India.
Correct.
There you go. Bollywood.
Sound reasoning.
I really, really, really want to get myself in a Bollywood movie. What do you think, listening audience? Have I got a chance? If I go to Mumbai, looking as I do, stroll about the street corner, I'm hoping to get in a Bollywood movie, maybe play a sort of token radio presenter character.
No, I think you got a very high chance of being in a Bollywood film if you do that.
Let's go.
That'd be such an amazing thing. All right, number two, here we go. When it comes to business, over 65% of the world's outsourcing is performed in which country?
65% of the world's outsourcing.
Isn't that a crazy number?
Yeah, I mean, it can only be the answer is India, right? Because we all know that the absolute stereotype of calling up a company to ask, oh, maybe I could speak to someone about customer service, and we get routed to an office in Mumbai or in Bangalore. We all have had that experience. It's India.
It is India. You're right. And I could just quite like the fact, so I think I wanted to say it on the episode.
But, 65% of the world's outsourcing. That is quite remarkable. Yeah. Adam, at this juncture, I'm 2-0 up on the old episode of Tripping Point. Could we introduce some sort of stake? Could we introduce some sort of gambit, some sort of reward for me winning?
Oh my goodness, what could we do? What could we offer up? Have you got anything in mind at all? Or
I would like you to pay me money.
How many rupees? How much is a...
would that be possible?
What can I... Is there something that you've wanted to do where you are? Is there like an excursion or maybe a nice sort of retreat or something that I can pay for if you get all five questions right?
Yeah, I want to go on an all-inclusive five-day safari to see tigers. Would that be possible?
If you get all five, yeah, we'll talk. We can enter a discussion about funding that.
So all five for a safari, or if I get three, win the best of five, maybe a cup of chai.
There you go. A week's supply of chai.
Okay.
I'm happy to commit to that.
Okay, let's do a week's supply of chai for five questions. Three questions right, I'll get one cup, and I'll relinquish the tiger.
Amazing. That's brilliant. Okay, so question number three. Here we go. The stakes have been raised. Supporting over 8% of the world's biodiversity, which country is home to the wettest inhabited place on Earth?
The wettest what place?
The wettest inhabited place.
The wettest inhabited place. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very interesting that, isn't it?
Very.
I've not experienced much in the way of wetness during my time in India. It feels incredibly dry, incredibly toasty. My goodness, I'm covered in sweat most of the time. I think the answer's got to be Canada.
It's incorrect, I'm afraid.
The wettest.
Yeah. So here we are. Get this. You'll find this really interesting. I know you will. The state of Meghalaya in India, or Meghalaya, it may be pronounced, in northeast India. So this is in between Bhutan and then...
Bangladesh.
I think just above Bangladesh, yeah. This area receives over 11,000 millimetres of annual rainfall. And just to put that into perspective, 11,000 annually... London sees around 600 millimetres.
Wow, that is amazing. I mean, it speaks to my mental state that when you said wettest, I was imagining like a sort of subaquatic domain, a bit like Atlantis, as opposed to just which place gets the most rainfall. I might have changed my answer. I was thinking maybe, do you consider ice to be the solid form of water and therefore really wet? Because Northern Canada, if you think about it, all that ice, it's wet as all hell, isn't it? It's just that wetness comes in a more solid form. So I appreciate, again, you've tricked me with wordplay. The score is 2-1.
I love the way you thought about that. And now that you've said the word ice, I would imagine that Canada is actually, in fact, far wetter than India.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Wet as all hell, that place, sometimes in the winter. Okay, 2-1, Adam. Let's go.
Okay, 2-1. Number four. This country consumes more donuts than any other country in the world.
Okay, all right.
Have a stab in the dark.
Define donut, because if I answer Canada and you go, oh, the Indian donut is one of the most important parts of a tiffin. Every time you have a tali or a tiffin in Canada, you'll get a little donut and that counts, okay?
Yeah.
But I don't call that a donut. That's an Indian treat. So I'm going to say Canada.
In terms of annual rainfall, which country eats the most donuts? So you've gone Canada.
I've gone Canada, Adam, and I'll be very upset if you say the answer's India.
It's Canada. It's Canada by some distance. Apparently, there are the most donut shops per capita in Canada. And I think thanks to Tim Hortons, big shout out, we're not being sponsored, but they're everywhere. More than a billion donuts are consumed annually. Isn't that staggering? What's the population of Canada? Maybe 30 million?
Did you say a billion donuts?
Yeah, with a B for Bravo.
That's pretty brutal, isn't it, that?
It is. That's a lot of donuts.
And the score's 3-1. I've secured myself a cup of chai today, which I'm quite excited about. This next question is just for glory then, Adam. What is it?
Okay, number 5. Here we go. On August the 15th, 1947, which country gained independence from Britain?
August the what?
August the 15th. Oh, like that fucking matters. August the 15th, 1947.
That's really funny. 47. Oh, Adam. Well, listen, I'm seeing colonial influence all the time during my sojourn around India. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a lot of things that make me think, goodness me, that is a country where my co-patriots have once been. There's a history here. There's a history here that I'm not qualified to talk about. And for that reason, Adam, for that reason, yeah. I don't know. I know that... I'm going to say Canada, Adam.
It's the wrong answer, mate. It's India.
When did Canada declare independence?
April the 17th, 1982.
Much later.
Much later. And my goodness, am I glad that I wrote that fact down.
So it was a stupid answer.
But yeah, I thought out of all the questions, I thought...
You're surprised I got that one wrong.
To leave that one till last. No, because I think it would have thrown most people, actually.
I mean, I should have known that, really, from all my travels around India, but it's good to learn on the podcast.
Yeah, why don't we meet each other in the middle and we'll say two cups of chai.
Two cups of chai.
Because I think you've showed your workings out and we were all behind you. You know, this is everyone's favourite travel quiz show and you always do so well.
I do. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. But that's an interesting thing to talk about, that whole independence thing. Canada and India, obviously two countries that, you know, have a relationship, a history with Britain, where we're from.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're experiencing it firsthand as well. I mean, obviously, in some areas of Canada, you can see a huge influence from Europe, obviously in Quebec being the main one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really interesting that you're able to feel that as well where you've been. I think there is actually, is there not a city in the southeast that's heavily influenced by the French as well in India?
Probably, mate. I've not been to the southeast yet, but I'm heading that way. I'm currently in a place called Chennai. We'll talk about that later. But there's lots of influence here. You know, I was just at a Catholic basilica yesterday, and I've been to, you know, they exist co-next to Hindu temples. There's a lot of intermingling culture and influence, you know?
Yeah, cool. Well, I look forward to picking your brains about that.
Fascinating stuff. Adam, I think this is the perfect time to invite the listener to join us next week. Enjoy us, I said. It's both enjoy and join. Why not come along and join us? You'll probably enjoy it. Go on an adventure with us next week. We're going to continue this adventure. We're going to talk all about my experiences in India. And we're going to hear more stories about traveling and backpacking. I can't wait. You can't wait. Let's go off on the adventure right now. Will you join me?
I will. And if you want to hear more of this episode, hop over to patreon.com/tripologypodcast. We're going to keep the chat going.
You've raised a very good point, Adam. Tripology on Patreon. You can go there. We do a section called Lost and Found, where we reveal little secrets behind the episode. It's quite exciting. You can join us there now. Head over, Tripology Podcast. We'll see you next week. Let's go now. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.